Hello, everyone. Welcome to Pharmacy Pathways. And this episode, we have a wonderful guest, Dr. Eileen Langstrat, who is not just a standard guest. She is my dear friend. And she also happens to be my preceptor in the past. And then we had the opportunity to work together briefly afterwards. And we formed a friendship from there. And I reached out to her and asked her if she would be able to share her expertise and medication use safety. So everyone, please put your virtual hands together for Dr. Eileen.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So I'm gonna call you Eileen now.
Please do.
So if you could please talk to us a little bit about your background, just so they can get to know you and who Eileen is.
Sure. Absolutely. So I first got into pharmacy as a technician in the early 2000s. So before the $4 list at Walmart for anyone who has been in pharmacy back that far. And I did it as a summer job after my freshman year of undergrad. And that it was a really good experience. It was my mom's idea, so I don't love that my mom is the reason that I ended up in pharmacy. No, completely kidding. She knew that it would be a good fit for me. I thought it was fascinating that there were so many different medications and pharmacists got to be the expert in how all of those worked in the body and the different drug-drug interactions. And just it was fascinating to me, and I loved the rapid fire environment where things could change and what you needed to focus on was different just a minute to minute, depending on whether you had customers or needed to troubleshoot something. And then my pharmacy manager at the time in my first pharmacy technician job was a really good mentor and was really encouraging that he thought I'd be a great pharmacist. And he jokingly say, but never go into pharmacy, which might have merit now that I look back, but
She's joking.
joking aside, I mean, I think it's important to really do a values assessment to figure out if you are contemplating going down this path to make sure that you know what you're getting into. However, having that early exposure really guided me towards, STEM spaces, and then I did undergrad focusing in biochemistry and was really on the pharmacy pathway from then on.
At the time, did you have the option to skip an undergraduate degree and go right in?
So I think that was technically an option, but I did not opt to do that. I did not have myself together as the baby adult that I was at the time. So I took the longer path. And I think that actually worked out better for me. I was able to step into pharmacy school, not completely burned out, which I think would have likely been the case for me had I gone very intensely focused for 3 years, then straight into pharmacy school. And I also found that my background and my undergraduate degree played really well with a number of the different classes that I then had to take in pharmacy school. So I found that I had a really strong base between that coupled with my pharmacy technician background. So that was very helpful. I don't want to say pharmacy school was easy, but I definitely had a much more easy time with it than some of my classmates who, not consistently, but some of them who came straight through just the nitty-gritty must-do classes and skipped over some of the additional things that I got to know about beforehand.
I was going to do ex first I was going to do the 2-year accelerated track and go right
Really?
in, and then that didn't
That's
happen,
very you, actually, to
isn't it?
contemplate.
Oh, goodness. And then I was like, no, I'm going to do the 3-year, and then after that it was like, okay, this is a little bit too fast for me. But actually, I had a professor who I told him what my plan was, and he asked me to step to the side so he could talk to me. And he
Really?
said, I really want you to consider getting an undergraduate degree, because
Really?
if you go straight into this field and you don't get an undergraduate degree, but all you, well, not all that you had, not to minimize it, right? But if you have your doctorate in this specialty and you decide you don't like it, where else will you be able to go?
What's your fallback?
And oh my gosh, it just like started like it was like a little seed that was planted, and I like heard him, and I was like, oh yeah, thanks for your concern, bye. But like, but the seed kept growing in my mind, and I couldn't get it out, and I was like, oh my gosh, he's right. Because it's also me to be like a little worrywart and like want to cover all bases.
Yes, also true.
So instead of me spending 2 years to go into pharmacy school, it actually took me 6.
Wow.
Because I was just focused on pharmacy classes. I had to now stay another, no, 5 years, I'm sorry. Mm. 5 years. Mm. So I had to now go back and take all of my classes to get a biology degree, undergrad degree.
Wow.
So I had to stay an extra 2 years, get my courses in. Mm. And then I was so stressed doing those classes at the last minute that I couldn't study for the PCAT at the same time.
I totally get that. So to be completely transparent, like my course was not straight either. Because I had life stuff happen outside of school. Mm. So my degree time frame, I started in fall of 2003, graduated in fall of 2009. So I had a year and a half off in there just in terms of different semesters. Got my degree. I did not think about trying to do PCAT anything or apply, like that just was not real life to me.
Yeah.
During undergrad, then I transitioned and was working full time as a pharmacy technician in long term care pharmacy. So I dabbled in retail, and then I did long term care, and then I finally got around to applying, and so I started pharmacy school in 2011. For me, that unusual, maybe atypical path was actually the best option. I needed my frontal cortex to develop a little bit more completely. And I think that paid off for me very well, because I didn't feel like I was floundering and trying to stay above water the entire time of school.
And you have to, your lifestyle and your study habits in undergrad, they're not going to carry you in pharmacy school.
No.
You're going to have to significantly shift. I had a gap year, and I was, instead of like groaning over having a gap year, I ended up doing research at the NIH, actually.
That's wonderful.
My friend was in a program, and he introduced me to the head of the program at the time. And she was like, if you're really interested, like, let's talk. And I was like, yes.
Yeah. Take advantage of those opportunities.
Save me. Mm-hmm. I do not want to be home for a year wasting away. So that just helped define me, as you said, and get my mind right for pharmacy school. And I still had to take prerequisites while I was in that one-year gap. Because all of these pharmacy schools, you may not need the degree, but each program will have its own set of prerequisites that you need. And so once I looked at all the schools, and I identified the most common prerequisites everyone was asking for, and I started taking those on my own and waited until I had an acceptance letter to finish out the last specific set.
Wow. Okay.
Yes.
I mean, I think it speaks to the idea that this path doesn't look the same for everybody, and however it looks for you is okay.
Yeah.
If you are somebody who knows in high school that you want to be a pharmacist and you belong in a retail setting, and that's, you want to invest your energies in the expedited path, I think that's great. That is not how I was, even though I loved pharmacy early on, in my exposure to it, but whatever works.
Yeah.
I think that humans have not unlimited energy, and just know that if you are burning through your mental capacity to sustain just the grind and stress that you're in pretty much chronically for school, that may peter out or ebb by the time residency comes, if that's something that you're also considering.
You have to pace yourself, which brings us to your residency experience, because most pharmacists now, it's not just ending when you graduate school. We're pursuing fellowships and residency programs. So if you didn't take any time to debrief, it's ongoing. And you did both a PGY1 and a PGY2.
Yes, I did.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about what you focused in on those 2 years?
Sure. Well, my focus was to get through them. My I think that's fair. It was hard. Residency was hard for me. Pharmacy school was hard too, but residency was a different kind of hard. And hard is fine. I think residency is intended to be hard. I did go to a pretty rigorous program, times two. And so it's basically a year spent seeking out your discomfort zone. You're just pushed out of your comfort zone and just held out there the entire time. And so it was constantly learning, constantly growing in ways that I just had not explored or done before, and learning new things. And it was a very value-added experience for me. And I can say that on this side of it, that I would also never want to repeat again. I think that that's fair. And I mean, I think there's a reason that you don't stay in residency forever. Although I have heard of some people like sub-specializing in PGY3s. I hope that's a rumor. That just seems...
No, thanks.
Yes, I think that's very intense. But the value of residency for me really is it truncates your trajectory to launch into a more specialized area that otherwise it would take you probably 10 years, 5 to 10 years ish to get into truly. Could be closer to 5 if you're incredibly lucky and the opportunities line up, but that's really the value. That's what residency is trading off. You're sacrificing the salary that you would make if you jumped right into retail pharmacy after graduation, and your time for a year for an intense year of experience that's probably equivalent to about 3 years per year of time invested, in terms of what you're exposed to. I got to publish my research project from my PGY1. I got BCPS certified during my second year of residency.
Oh my goodness. Yes,
residency was hard. It was value added. Glad I did it. Would make the same choice to do it again if I were back in that same time frame again. But it is a choice. It is a choice where you are choosing to make some sacrifices in terms of your lifestyle initially.
Yeah. And I don't know if you came up with the 3 year equivalent thing on your own, but that actually is what they say.
I think I read it somewhere.
Okay. Yeah. I read it too. And that's what helped influence me is 1 year residency can be the equivalent of 3 to 5 years, depending on your program.
Exactly.
Of practice experience.
And that's not to knock other pathways, but that is an option that is intense to varying degrees, depending on the residency program, but it's designed to be an intense exposure to multiple years worth of pharmacy things. I practiced in a hospital during residency, so my exposure was in inpatient predominantly, but there are certainly AmCare residencies and other residencies that are more so focused in the outpatient space, community residencies too. I can't speak to their level of intensity, but I would assume similarly that the objective is the same.
And your PGY2 was focused in medication use safety.
We'll call it med safety for short. It's just easier.
We'll call it med safety, yes. And tell us a little bit about, well, not a little bit about, because that's what today's episode is on, is med safety. So a lot of us we hear that term, medication safety, but you just assume that like that's implied if you're going to be a pharmacist.
Isn't that your job?
Yeah, that's your job. But this is actually a specialty of a pharmacy practice, an area that you can specialize in. And there's residency programs that specialize in this as well. And I don't think many people know that.
I didn't know about it until I was a resident.
Same. Yeah. When I took your rotation.
Am I getting into? Didn't I just do this in pharmacy school?
Yes. And I was like, what is this? Because I was so clinically focused. My brain could not comprehend, like, wait, how am I supposed to think?
It's a different way of thinking. It truly is, because it is leveraging clinical knowledge and extrapolating it into the more pharmacy operation space is a lot of it. Yeah. Essentially is what you're doing.
And you have to be a problem solver, but you're asking different questions than you're trained
to ask.
Then
what is the clinical concern for this med? It's because this is the clinical concern with this med, and also here's the logistical concerns with the medication use process for this med. How do we facilitate addressing safety concerns associated with the medication, with the mode of delivery, with the process in whether that's prescribing or preparing, dispensing, mm-hmm. administering it to the patient. So it's fun. And I really love medication, med safety as a specialty, mm-hmm. because it is, you never know what you're going to get into in a given yeah. day. Let me tell you how I found out about this specialty, because I think I thought it was kind of interesting. So I guess in school, I had heard of ISMP. We had a drug information pharmacist who, go ahead.
Okay. Explain to them just briefly what ISMP is.
Oh, sorry. ISMP is the Institute for Safe Medication Practices, is what it stands for as an acronym. And they're not government affiliated, but they are an organization that is a champion for safe medication practices. They do a lot in that space. They partner with the FDA regularly. I did a rotation with them in my PGY2, actually. Oh, cool. They have a fellowship for people who complete PGY1s as well, which is an option to pursue for those. That might be really niche. I don't yeah. know how many people know about that. But they are a preeminent organization when it comes to all things med safety related. They publish best practices every year. They have different assessments that organizations can use to kind of benchmark themselves in terms of medication safety practices in different areas, mm-hmm. And a lot more that they offer. I think you can get consultation with them, sort of ad hoc, but they're a very interesting organization, and they publish newsletters, recurring newsletters, mm-hmm. pretty frequently. There's one focused on nurses as well as just a general pharmacy one that's inpatient yeah. versus another one that's more outpatient facing. Because medication safety is perpetual and a lot, there's just a lot to focus on, and there's constantly something that kicks off. So I remember seeing these newsletters. We'd get emails from this drug information pharmacist was his background, and he taught us research methodology was the class that I had him for. But I remember seeing those emails out of context. We were never oriented at that time to this is medication use safety. This mm-hmm. is what I do. This is what it is as a job. So then fast forward, my very first day of my first rotation in my PGY1, I was on my administrative rotation, and the Joint Commission shows up. We knew that it was coming. We didn't quite know exactly when, because yeah. that's how it works. So this is the time when the behind the scenes people who you're like, I know you have a job. I'm not quite sure what you do. And I think that sort of includes medication safety officers in hospital settings.
Yeah.
They come to the forefront and they're sort of running the show, because they are the ones who are kind of course correcting and making sure that readiness is good to go whenever this might happen. Mm. So I got to see someone who is very good in this role just do what they do in the medication safety space. And that is how I got to get exposed to it. That led to me advocating for an elective rotation in med safety with a med safety officer, so beyond shadowing, and guided my choice of research project and things like that. So that kicked off my exploration into med safety as a field of its own, but also as an avenue to get into a leadership type area in a different path than a PGY1, PGY2 in administration.
That's awesome. Day one mm-hmm. of PGY1.
Yep. And obviously the Joint Commission stays for more than one day. And so I had an opportunity to help refute one of the findings of theirs. And I got to do a deep dive investigation and review of that. And for a finding that we couldn't refute, I then had a long-term involvement in helping to make sure that we correctly addressed that and maintained compliance with the concern identified. So it was a great learning opportunity just from that one touch point. And I really got my first eye-opening experience of, wow, people do this for a job.
Mm-hmm.
They fix things for a job.
Yeah.
They talk to people and understand, like, how did this error happen for a job? That was really cool. It was a fun day for me, and it's certainly very impactful.
And you obviously loved your rotation because you yes. dedicated a whole year to it for your PGY2.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And what rotations were, you mentioned one of them, but mm-hmm. what were the overall experiences in your PGY2 for someone who might be considering whether they should explore this as a residency path?
Sure. So in terms of rotations, I spent time with the various med safety officers within the hospital. So there we had three, one dedicated to kind of adult inpatient and critical care, one dedicated to pediatrics, and another dedicated to the oncology space, which encompassed both inpatient as well as they had like an intensive outpatient type thing for because patients on chemo, right? So sort of a different area. I also spent time with the overall med safety officer there who sort of, it was actually his last year before retirement, but who sort of oversaw all things behind the scenes and facilitated things for all the other med safety officers in their, in their spaces. And so that was more of supporting. So I supported conversion to a different electronic health record. That was early on in my second year of residency. And figuring out all of the safety issues and concerns and addressing them effectively related to that transition, and related to barcoding for nurses, which was also new at that time and had, I think they were kind of late adopters of that process, but that was problematic if it was not functional. So all of these things, rotation with ISMP, I rotated with ASHP as well. The American Society for Health Systems Pharmacists, and had a med safety rotation there. Got to do interesting things related to USP 800, which the update for that had just come out, and we were trying to get hands around the impact in terms of PPE requirements pursuant to the changes coming for USP 800. And then involved a lot in just safety meetings and things, I guess, would be the best thing to call it without going into specific nomenclature. Lots of involvement in updating policies and figuring out what was or wasn't working. Error investigation was just evergreen throughout. I also had a long-term rotation with an informatics pharmacist because you work very closely with informatics and a lot of the changes that you're making as it relates to how medications are listed in an electronic health record, how they are orderable in an electronic health record kind of thing. So it was a very mixed bag and a lot of fun, highly variable day to day.
And even during the 1 month I spent with you in the rotation that you precepted, I could tell you were very passionate about this work.
Yes, I love it. I think med safety is always going to be a passion of mine, even though that's not the title that I have right now. I find that it, the fundamental principles of medication use safety and focusing on just culture and high reliability as an organization, and really being preoccupied with, I know that errors are going to occur. How do I anticipate them? How do we learn as best we can from things that do occur in order to prevent harm to other patients in a similar situation? I'm always going to love that space. But that skill set extrapolates really well more broadly than just for the person wearing the medication safety hat, acting as the med safety specialist.
Tell us about that. So because a lot of folks, they can be a little hesitant to specialize because they feel pigeon-toed in a certain area and they don't know if they can pivot later. So what other areas of pharmacy can this background serve?
I mean, I don't want to say the sky's the limit, but I do think it is all about how you market yourself. Truly it is. The way that my brain works, I see things for how they could be very easily. And I don't know if that's the way that most people's brain works or not, but so the way that does not work well is you can take something that is not very functional and think, oh, this could totally be functional if you just fix X, Y, Z. So I have to have accountability for that for myself. But what that means is that I am able to move into spaces and make them better, basically, and fix things and fix dysfunctional processes and really help to shore. It's change management, right? That is a skill set. That's one of the one of the skill sets that I learned during my residency and have just continued to grow in that way. But that applies pretty much anywhere, pretty much anywhere that has a system or processes or workflows, figuring out how to optimize them and how to do quality improvement and how to understand how you're evaluating compliance with the changes that you make and sustain changes over time. So I think that it really plays nicely in a pharmacy kind of operations space. Right now I'm working in managed care overseeing pharmacy for this organization. But I interface quite a bit with pharmacy benefits managers, our current vendor for that, and and work in that space. I do prior authorization review, formulary management, compliance, fraud, waste, abuse evaluation type things. It just depends on the day, regulatory compliance. It's very interesting. It's a lot. But we are growing pharmacy as an organization and figuring out how to right size it. So I'm excited for that journey. And that requires somebody who can see what the possibilities are and not get bogged down recognizing that there's a million steps between where you are and where you want to get.
That's a wonderful answer for those who are looking to... They're curious, or they're going to watch this episode and they're going to be like, that's for me. If we reverse it, right, and we look at folks who are already practicing and they're not quite happy with what they're doing and they want to make a change, but they're like, well, I didn't do a residency. I've been doing this for 5+ years. Like, how can I get into this space? What other backgrounds would be... would be a good way to like segue into this position? They may not feel like they, just because they have the residency, that they don't have a shot at getting into this specific field.
Well, I think that the title of medication safety officer is most typically seen in an inpatient setting. So I think it would be easier for somebody who is already practicing in some way in a hospital setting or can get into a hospital setting, which, although difficult without a residency, is not impossible. And then I would say, so let's assume that that is true, right? Let's assume no residency, but you are working as a staff pharmacist in a hospital. Then I think it's about being willing to say yes to opportunities that present themselves, right? Because I've never known a pharmacy department that's not in need of people who want to lean in and do a little bit more work. And right, like, there's always work to do. So the one thing that I have noted, really engaged pharmacists tend to be the ones who will report errors, right? You're seeing them happen every day, or really, we call them close calls. So this is something that was caught and corrected before it reached the patient. It didn't, not only did it not cause harm, it never got administered, right? And that could mean a lot of different things when you're talking about a medication error. But speaking in generalities, we had pharmacists who were reporting things, multiple things every week, because especially if you're on the bench, if you're in a dispensing type of space, you're touching so many prescriptions and processing so many orders that you are in your best position to kind of see these things. So as an example, when I was in my PGY2, I had an order come to me for fentanyl patches. I think they were like 50 micrograms per hour or something. And I took the time to look into it, and our system at the time didn't have any real safeguards built out. And keep in mind, we had recently transitioned to a new electronic health record system. And so I identified that this patient shouldn't have been started on fentanyl in the first place because they were essentially opioid naive. And this was an intentional up titration in their fentanyl patches prior to discharge. So I was able to contact the provider and really completely change a course on what could have precipitated a patient's demise, either before leaving or
wonderful
at home.
Wonderful choice.
So when you think about, yes, I was the pharmacist on the scene finding this and reporting it. What that led to in the medication safety space, we changed the entire logic around fentanyl patches to automatically screen for opioid naive status and prevent ordering not even just make it apparent to the pharmacist. We prevented the order from happening as well. And so built an entire smart set related to fentanyl patches to really shut down that from even being a possible pathway for patients.
Wow.
So that's just one example of what of the power of medication safety as a specialty.
That's a really good example. I feel like you might have used that on an interview before.
Maybe.
Okay, that was really good. That one decision to report that I remember this was the biggest takeaway that I took away from my rotation, is that we're not supposed to be harping on individual mistakes. We're supposed to be optimizing the system to prevent human error from even being what contributes to medication errors and close calls.
So yeah, recognizing, so human error is always present, right? Like right. If you have humans do something 100 times, they're not going to get it right 100 times, right? There is just an error rate pursuant to being humans. So if you recognize that, you want your system to have resiliency built in to accommodate for that fallibility. And so it's fun to think about. I'm sure you can, yes, I am very passionate about this space, but it extrapolates well. So if you as the pharmacist are taking the time to report those, take the opportunity to volunteer if you haven't, if you have a chance to sit down and talk to somebody who's charged with trying to fix the problems that you're reporting and keep speaking up. Suggest changes to whether that be in policy or in how a system is set up. Related to prescription processing, related to workflows that are happening in the pharmacy space or beyond. And I think that that gives you good exposure to some of the fundamentals in this space. And then in terms of if you really wanted to not have to do a residency because that ship has sailed for you, smaller hospitals tend to be more, residency tends to be a preferred qualification versus an outright requirement for the job. So there might be more room for stepping into that role based on somebody who's really eager to learn, especially if you're presenting yourself as I'm eager to grow this skill set. And so prove that you have that passion and are invested in the safety space. And it is completely learnable. Like I said, the value of residency is that it shortens the timeline, not that that is the only place. Like I'm not trying to gatekeep and say that residency is the only possible way that you can become a med safety officer. I have known wonderful med safety officers who have just homegrown experience that allowed them to assume that role, completely separate from residency.
Thank you for explaining that to people, because we can really get in our own head and we can be the people that hold ourselves back.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And are there other disciplines within med safety that you're working with, or is it usually pharmacists because of our unique background with medications?
So I love that you asked this question. It's interdisciplinary, 100%. So that is part of what I love about this is you get to work with such a mix of people, because medications touch everywhere in like a hospital setting, especially, but truly. So when you think about the medication use process, starting with the initial patient evaluation, where it's identified that they need a medication, and then you move through the ordering process, evaluating that, procuring the medication, sending it to where the patient is, and then getting it administered, that involves a lot of different players who are not pharmacists. And so part of the work that I would do, especially with event investigation, where an error did occur or or a close call where it didn't occur but was primed to do so. Yes, I'm talking to pharmacists. I'm engaging with technicians, providers, nurses, medical assistants, anyone that is involved in some capacity in that process. They're the experts in their scope. And so that's the best people to engage with to really find a solution that is value added to them and truly gets to the root cause of the issue.
So you're able to seek these people out and talk to them to get intel, essentially. But do those disciplines also have a seat at the table as far as like the regulatory component of it?
Ideally. So in a perfect world, yes. I think that I am not able to speak to more broadly than my own experiences, right? So I have been fortunate to be in organizations, whether during residency or after, that where just being interdisciplinary was the norm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. However, I know that there is still a much more defined hierarchy and pecking order in other places that defaults pharmacists to a certain space and makes it harder to have those connections or really kind of have true interconnectedness when it comes to accountability for medication safety. So I hope so is the answer, but I can't promise that it's consistently that way.
Okay.
Well, and I would
received.
Say, well, and to add on to that, I think one of the biggest barriers to that being true is also, so you mentioned focusing not on the individual error and blame earlier. That still happens quite a bit because we live in a litigious society, right? So if there is harm, right? My work is predicated on the idea that we want to learn from harm that occurs. Well, people want to blame someone when harm occurs, typically.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, it's not that there is never space for that. It is teasing out and recognizing what is truly reckless behavior in that space. So coming to work to do your job as a healthcare provider intoxicated, full reckless. I don't care if you do it for 100 days and no one gets hurt. That is reckless and warrants follow-up that may include termination. Versus you are a human in a system that is not setting you up for success and a bad outcome occurs despite you doing your best efforts. And I think that is a far more common scenario. And that is the space where med safety officers can shine because we can be a voice to try to say, hey, we need more time to figure this out to leadership and others who are wanting to get it closed down and place blame. And so that's the space where I think, getting to fight for, things to look just and fair, is part of what drives my passion in this space.
And you just summarized just culture, correct?
Yep, okay. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. You remember rotation.
I do. And you, name dropped it earlier and I was like, I remember just culture because I really liked that approach. I was actually quite shocked to see that people were intentionally trying to avoid blame, placing blame.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a balance, right? Because there was historically, when you think about med safety, like 90s and earlier in terms of time, would be where it was very much blame. So we're going to figure out who did this. Who do we point the finger at when a bad outcome happens? And so then there was a shift from that indirect response to the fact that that was a very punitive culture and people just like swept things under the rug. So, you know, nothing to see here. There's no problem if we can hide it at all. Right. And that really completely, negates any possible ability to learn and change from and make your patient safer. So recognizing that there was a big shift then towards what you're describing, which is kind of blame free. And that's like, nobody's ever at fault ever in any capacity. That's not helpful either.
Yeah.
It helps people to better vocalize concerns as they see them, but it also gives allowance to the level of bad behavior that rises to egregiousness, right?
Yeah,
and that, so just culture is kind of hitting the balance in between.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of the work that I have done as a med safety specialist is being a strong advocate for just culture. I've trained pharmacists and other leaders on what that looks like and would use it every day as a part of event investigation and that type of thing. And, you know, policy review to make sure that what we were doing and how we were supporting our staff and preventing errors and doing right by our patients was safe and also fair.
Mm-hmm. And as a pharmacist, if I'm in a culture that is facilitating that environment, I'm more likely to report these errors.
Exactly.
And encourage my peers.
To do so.
To do so.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's what you want, right? Because one of my favorite / least favorite questions would be, you know, what is your error rate? And it is such an indication that you just don't have an understanding of the med safety space if you ask that question.
Mm.
Because fundamentally, we know that errors are underreported. They're voluntarily reported, right? And if you're catching and intervening on something so it's not reaching a patient, only selective things are getting reported. So at baseline, we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg when it comes to errors, both those that reach the patient and don't cause harm, but also those that were caught and corrected before reaching the patient. So the error rate at baseline is just what is your amount of reported errors? And then you would have some people misunderstand and think that what you should be doing is trying to drive down your rate of reported errors. And you actually want the opposite of that, because you want to understand and track towards people feeling safe to report things. Inherently, you have an imperfect system. So you would want to be aware so that you have more opportunities to correct more things.
Interesting. So when you're seeing a smaller med error rate, that's not, your brain isn't going to like, oh, that's great. They don't have a lot of errors. It's like, oh, there's a lot of underreporting going on here.
Correct. I mean, maybe not. But in this day and age, I don't think that any hospital or healthcare organization has truly achieved high reliability when it comes to that space. So yeah, give me the hospital with, you know, way more errors versus the other one with few and far between. Because that doesn't mean that nothing unsafe is happening. That means that no one's talking about it.
Wow, that's powerful. Thank you for sharing that, because that also, I think that also applies to how we think on a daily basis when we do our jobs. Mm-hmm. We can look at our peers and we can feel like, oh, they're not struggling, or even a student, it's like they're not struggling because they're not reporting it. Mm-hmm. Like they can be going home and dealing with things.
Absolutely.
And when they show up, you have no idea and everything looks great. Mm-hmm. So the more that we talk about these things, hence this podcast, the more that we talk about things, the more that there's this culture that facilitates everybody really understanding like where the triggers are, where the gaps are, and then that gives us the opportunity to do better and support each other.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that. I think that speaks to just when I say med safety and the principles and ideas, it extrapolates so far beyond that niche. I've really seen it be a launching pad into other areas that you can then go forth and leverage medication safety principles to just make improvements and just have this continual quality improvement opportunity. And I love it. I think it will always be something that I'm very passionate about.
Well, thank you, Eileen. So I feel like we talked about a lot of things that I definitely wanted the audience to hear. I wanted them to know exactly what medication safety is, what the residency experience may be like, what qualities serve well, like just as a human being, right? Like not just like what I can do at my job, but like my innate quality. Do I like to solve problems?
Yes.
Am I proactive? Do I need to be told? Do I have integrity? You know, these things that people could utilize that might make them a good fit. Do you have anything else that you think we should know before we close?
I mean, I think that it's a good question. I didn't prepare something beforehand. I think that no matter where you are in your journey in pharmacy, whether that's, do I want to consider doing this at all? And I'm, you know, early on, like pre-start of my career, or very early on in the start of my career, or I am a pharmacist recognizing like, I don't know what I want, but not this.
Yeah.
I think that focusing on a values assessment, not about like, yes, some of that is about what work you want to do, but a lot of that is about how you need work to fit in your bigger picture life that extends far beyond work. I think that is key. I think it's really easy when you're a student, when you're a resident, to lose sight of that, because even if you did that initially, you're very much focused on your more immediate goal, which is graduating or successfully getting through residency and finding a job. So I think that doing that as a part of this bigger process of searching to try to find something is key. And I'm glad that I bring medication safety into part of my values assessment, regardless. So if I were starting to look for a new career tomorrow or a new job tomorrow, mm-hmm. I know that I would want to still have involvement of medication safety in some way. But that doesn't mean that I have to have medication safety officer in my title, right? Right. There's different ways to champion med safety. And I think that it does the opposite of pigeonholing. So hopefully that's good last advice.
It is good. And I just want to have a follow-up question for that. For those who need a little bit more clarification, how can they do that value assessment?
How can they do it? So
what are the exact questions they should probably be thinking?
You know, it really comes down to what quality of life, like what you want your life to look like. Mm-hmm. So yes, that is doing work, that is in the context of work too, but it's also, well, when am I not working? When do I have to work? So part of, like, logistically, part of why I like med safety, not the primary reason, but part of it is the hours are pretty normal. In a hospital setting, that's usually just business days, normal hours. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're probably staffing some weekends and holidays. But that is a consideration because that's not necessarily typical in the pharmacy space, depending on your job. So that's mm-hmm. a piece of it. Throw COVID into the mix, which we've all been to in the last few years. I also, as a value, like to have the opportunity for hybrid work, which the jobs that I have chosen offer that.
Hybrid as in work remote.
Hybrid as in the option to work remotely, yes. Yeah. And again, that's not consistently true for every single med safety position, but that is certainly possible, depending on what's allowed. And my experience in other jobs and also interviewing for other med safety positions in the past has been that that is becoming more and more true post-COVID, that there's some flexibility in that space too. Mm-hmm. That is a quality of life choice. So thinking about the hours, thinking about what it is that is expected of you and how you're engaging with work, as well as, you know, the typical things, compensation and whatnot. But yeah. I had, at one point I had written out explicitly like what my needs were about a job, and very little of it had to do. I mean, I think I had something related to med safety, mm-hmm. Or at least extrapolating to med safety, but otherwise it was just the logistics of how I want to set myself up outside of work for life stuff. So that's really what it is. And I think that that's advice yeah. that I would have loved to hear that when I was much younger. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that was ever framed out to me. It was more about, you know, pick yeah. your career and figure out where you're going to go to college because you have to go to college. And I think that's very generational. as well. But I think that there's a lot of different ways to be a medication safety champion. And I love it. I would strongly advocate for people to consider it as a role, especially mm-hmm. since there are now the combined PGY1 and PGY2s in medication safety and policy. But beyond that, I think it as a specialty and finding your way to get there in other ways is also value added. If it aligns with your bigger needs yeah. in life.
Beautifully said. Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. This is a pleasure.
Yeah, this has been awesome. And I just love highlighting the unique and it's not hidden, but it's just,
It is much more behind the scenes.
Yes.
It really is. Like if you have been in a hospital setting and you'll see the med safety officer, but you might not know what they're doing. Yeah. And it really depends on whether or not you've interacted with them before.
Yeah. Thank you for giving this specialty so much justice.
You're welcome.
It deserves.
You're welcome.
Well, that is our time for today. And everyone, we have Dr. Eileen Langstrat.
Thank you for having me again.
Thank you for being here. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.